Back to the story with Dr. John Elliott helping us and joining us for a few more minutes. And Rocky, so now you're getting ready. You're getting ready to start. It's 1974. The Steelers have shown their patience as well. You are very embedded in this offense as well. And you've got a Terry Bradshaw who's coming into his own and his own confidence. Take us through that year, because I want to make a quick transition in the last few minutes we have to the present Steelers and any similarities that you see.
You know, I have to reiterate or talk about a couple of the points before we get into
sure.
it, which I think are important, and this is specifically from a leadership point of view, and a willingness to feel that you're a part of an organization. Part of that is to have a feeling that somebody has an interest in you as a person, and wants you to and helps you to develop. You know, when the doctor told me that I would not play, that was one negative impact. Several weeks after that conversation I had, I received in the mail a postcard, and a simple postcard, and on the postcard it said this: "Rock, team is not doing well. We need you. Art Rooney," who happened to be the owner of the team. Two lines, very simple, but all of a sudden, from my point of view, it was like, whoa, somebody has an interest, you know, and somebody... And somebody says that they want you or need you. So no matter what the doctor said, here's the owner of the team saying that. Now, whether or not he wanted me or needed me, it was at that moment in time very important how I perceived things. In 1974, let's jump ahead again. It was a strike year, and we were out on strike. Was like 3 weeks before that strike dissipated, before we went into camp. Ultimately, we had 11 rookies make the team that year because of that strike. Out of those 11 rookies, thank God, four of them are now in the Hall of Fame. So it was a pretty good draft year. But during that strike period, here's another thing, is that I came back from the picket line, there was a telephone call that Mr. Art Rooney had called me again, and I'm thinking, geez, I'm just a special teams guy. Why is he calling me? And he called me back at 11 o'clock at night, and he said, the reason I called you, he said, I was out earlier, and I had the radio on in the car, and during one of those sports talk shows, a guy who called in said, why are guys on strike? You know, where's the loyalty of these players today? And especially that Blair kid, with all everything that the Rooneys had done for him coming back from Vietnam. And Mr. Rooney said to me, he said, now, that bothered me. He said, and I didn't want it to bother you. He said, what I did for you, I would have done for any one of my boys, and you paid us back both on and off the field more than we could ever ask for. So he said, if you believe in the strike, you'd be back on that picket line tomorrow, and it's our responsibility as owners to get this settled and get back in play. He said, I just didn't want you to worry about what other people are saying. And there was another indication of the type of ownership and leadership on that team, because here was a guy, not a star, just 16th round draft choice, trying to make this team, but yet they had that specific interest. Okay, so 74 starts. Bradshaw's on the bench. Joe Gillum is the starting quarterback, and we go 4-1-1 in 1974, and Bradshaw comes in about that sixth game, and I get a chance to start as well with Franco in that game. And the reason that I get a chance to start wasn't because of my size, it wasn't because of my speed, but basically Chuck Noll felt there was a weakness in the offense, in the backfield specifically. And he asked Dick Hoak, the backfield coach, who his best blocker was. And Hoak said Blyer, and he said, fine, start him. And it was my one talent that I had, or my contribution. And so I got a chance to start because of my ability to block, fitting into that system. And not complaining about not getting a chance to carry the ball, but just doing my job. And from that day forward, Bradshaw started. I got a chance to play, and Franco, of course, was in there. And we got to the playoffs, and we go to the Super Bowl that year. And then Franco and I play six more years together in that backfield with Bradshaw, and we win three more Super Bowls. And so at that moment in time, I think in 1972, my perspective, at least from my perspective, 1972 was the Immaculate Reception, a playoff game, the first one. It was the first time in 40 years that the team was in the playoffs. We played the Oakland Raiders. In the remaining 28 seconds of the game, a deflected pass. It was well known in Steeler history and sports history. Franco Harris picks it up and scoots 55 yards down the sidelines to score and to win that game. And it was a turning point, and it was a turning point that gradually was coming. A turning point that started in 1969, maybe with Chuck Noll and his philosophy. A brand new stadium in 1970, kind of dissecting the past from the future. And it was like the new Steeler organization. In the 1972, we finally won a game that we'd usually lose. And it kind of was a buy-in and a belief system to Chuck, to the organization, and to the fellow ball players that, hey, maybe we can do this. 73 was a transition year. 74, we put it together, and we get to the playoffs, and we win that Super Bowl. Didn't get enough respect, maybe because we were kind of underdogs to the Minnesota Vikings, who had been there before. But we won, and then in 1975, we came back, and we had to play the Dallas Cowboys. And for us, that was, as well, kind of a turning point, because we earned our respect by beating the Cowboys in that game. And then 76, Franco and I gained 1,000 yards that year. And the reason we gained 1,000 yards, it's not because of our ability, but because of the fact that, again, Bradshaw gets hurt in a Cleveland game, and he's knocked out for the remaining part of the season, or most of that season. We have a backup quarterback who happens to be a rookie, Mike Krusek. And Mike doesn't have the learning curve down as far as the passing game, so he can hand off the ball. So we had a running attack that became very powerful. And because of that, both Franco and I get 1,000 yards rushing. So,
listen, we're gonna have to take a break from the chronology, because we've only got 5 minutes with a guy that everybody wants to hear about, not just about the incredible things that you did back then, but of course, what's the connection with the lessons from then and now? And before I say goodbye to Dr. Elliott, as you listen to the fact that that team, that turning point Rocky just referred to, the Immaculate Reception, sometimes it takes one crucial thing that you prepared for a lifetime for, but you never get the breaks, and finally there's one moment in time when you're ready for it and it happens, whether it was Franco Harris and his ability to catch a ball 4 inches off the ground, that he could see it, he had the vision, whatever the reason, that took place, and that level of belief was a quantum leap after that. Before you go, tell us the example of that, the example that one key moment in one game, literally one play, can totally change the confidence of a team.
It can make all the difference. And, you know, the people that take advantage of that, the people that we tell stories of over and over, are the ones that, regardless of what's happening, they're looking for things to go their way. They're actively looking, as opposed to making the choice to look for the reasons why things aren't going your way. And those choices, regardless of whether or not it's a long shot or whether or not it's a long way away, those choices make all the difference in taking advantage of the opportunity when it does present itself.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. Appreciate it, and we'll see you next week on Head Games Radio. John Elliott.
It's been a great pleasure. Thanks, Rocky. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Doc.
We're also joined now by Mark Schmidt, who played a couple years for the Detroit Lions. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Nick. I'm listening to these great Rocky Blyer stories. This is great stuff, man. Just let them ramble.
Exactly.
Right.
Hey, listen, Rocky, let's talk about optimistic paranoia. Let's talk about the fact that Pittsburgh team began to believe in itself and look for reasons to win, and how you look at a Ben Roethlisberger who looked for reasons to know that he could come back in a matter of weeks and start off and throw the ball across the field almost from day one of training camp as if he wasn't almost dead just a few weeks ago.
You know, what Dr. Elliott was talking about, you know, is true. Having anybody plays a sport, you know, kind of goes through that. A belief system of learning to win and believing that you can win. I mean, my last 2 years that I played, or 78, 79, the Super Bowls 13 and 14, I tell people were the most exciting and best times that I had playing this game. And the reason was because here was a team that was a mature team together that believed they could win. that nobody could beat us. At least I felt that nobody could beat us. The only way that we're going to lose a game is that if we beat ourselves. And we had great rivalries with the Oakland Raiders, but also then with the Houston Oilers, and they're great teams of the latter part of the 70s. And I always felt is that if they ever beat us in a playoff game and a championship game, is that Katie barred the door, they had all the talent in the world. But at times, I felt the teams of that nature were saying, well, yeah, you know, we're going to lose this game somehow, or they're going to come back somehow, they're going to beat us somehow. And we just thought, well, there was a way that, if we're down, we're going to win. And the comparison with the Steelers of this year. So that's kind of set a tradition. Unfortunately, those teams maybe in the 80s and the 90s had to live off that tradition from the fans' point of view. But now in 2000 and 2004, 5, and now this coming team, is that they established their own tradition and they established their own reputation. If you look at what they did this past season, given a 15-1 season the year before with Ben Roethlisberger as a rookie quarterback, and then the expectations that were set, not only by his fellow teammates, but by the fans and the support bases, is that they came and they won their first 7 games. Ben got hurt. They lost 5 games. It was 7-5. It becomes a turning point. They can either give up and say, okay, fine, we've got 4 games. If we make 500, you know, we're out of the playoffs. It's not going to affect. They had to win all 4 games just to get into the playoffs. And to get to the Super Bowl, they had to win all 3 road games to get that chance to go to the Super Bowl. And they did it. And they put 7, I think, superb games together. And they won those games. And they had a belief, and they went to the Super Bowl. Now, in the Super Bowl, it wasn't a great game from maybe a fan's point of view. But
there was no flow to it at all.
No flow to it. It felt uncomfortable, but the Steelers made the plays when it was necessary to be able to win the game. And that is a mark of a championship, and it's a mark of a tradition and a belief system that they have established and start to build on. So as we go into this season coming up, that's what they have behind them as a legacy, those 2 years in that Super Bowl, and kind of a belief that no one can beat them, barring major injuries to either Roethlisberger or an offensive line that gets decimated to some degree, they should be in the thick of things.
Well, Rocky Blyer, it's been such an honor to listen to your story, and we hope we can have you on and talk more in detail about the notion of belief, the notion of courage as well. Final comment from you, Pat Tillman. Tell me, as you think about that example of a modern-day hero, somebody who sacrificed, who didn't have to do it either,
that's right.
What is the loss that Pat Tillman represents?
Well, I think just that. I mean, the fact is that Pat made a choice, not that he had to, and because of that choice, I have to elevate them to a certain level. Now, the men and women who fight in Iraq, I should say, in Afghanistan, and I take my hat off and I thank them every day for what they go through, you know, is that given choices, you know, Pat turned down a multi-million-dollar contract to be able to serve. And I always ask this question, what if the roles were reverse? What would be the percentage of those men and women would choose to go into the service and turn down that kind of a contract? That was the distinction or difference in Pat Tillman's life and what he stands for, is that he believed in something that he felt that he needed to follow and do, and he made that choice, and it wasn't about money, it wasn't anything, but about what he felt was right and the courage to be able to act on it.
Well, you have been a symbol of courage for many Americans. I'm glad we could renew the story of what Rocky Blyer went through and what he accomplished. Rocky, thanks so much for joining us. Bless you, and we look forward to having you on the show in the future.
Hey, anytime, Nick. I appreciate it, my good friend. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.